Rot. He paused to spit a brown jet at a fly on the floor. But still, it nearly killed him. That afternoon, Ram went for a swim in the river. It was muddy and high from the monsoon rains, the current fast. Whitewater warned him of crocodiles swarming up from the Delta lagoons, drawn by all the corpses. He shrugged as if he didn't care. We stayed on the dock watching for him till the sun went down. Kenleth kept asking about the crocodiles, and I had to wonder if he meant to come back. Dusk had fallen before Kenleth shouted, and we saw him wading ashore, the crown of worlds glowing to light his way. He was breathing hard, but I thought that bitter set was washed off his face. "She loved me," he muttered to me. "I can't be sorry we came." He spent all the next morning in Celia's room, poring over that electronic book, and finally slammed it shut. "The text is chicken tracks. The video sections make it look like a history of the planet. There's just enough to tease us in the maps and that trilithon symbol in those high mountains west. A crazy bet, but it's the only chance I see." "Chance?" That startled me. "You mean you want to go there?" He nodded, his face still bleak and strained. "There's nothing for us here. No reason not to try." He shook his head, his face drawn grim again. "Don't bet on it. The map was drawn when the planet was younger. No delta yet. The mouth of the blood is far down the coast. That trilithon has likely been knocked down by a quake by now, or buried under a lava flow." That afternoon, Kenleth and I went with him back to the Academy complex, which held the museum, the Crail Library, and the concert and lecture halls around them. He wanted modern maps of the upper river and the records of any expeditions into the mountains on the map. Vandals had been there before us. We found doors battered in, display cases smashed. There were no lights, but Ram found a candle lantern a little brighter than his birthmark. The storm had damaged the museum roof, and the floors were carpeted with rain-sodden waste. "The Grand Dominion." He stopped us at the entrance to a gloomy hall. "This was Celia's treasure house, her prize collection from what she thought had been imperial tombs. Personal ornaments, weapons, tools, tantalizing objects she had no names for." His shoulders hunched and the birthmark dimmed. "Relics of Celia." His lip quivered like a hurt child's. "Relics of death." A long moment passed before he drew his body straight and turned to leave the building. "All precious to her, but no good to us." He shrugged and gave me a bitter little grin. "If the hot men ever reached the spot, they never made maps, not any kind we can read. Whitewater never heard of any expeditions far beyond ahead of steam navigation. We got a long way to go." That night a stabbing headache woke me. I lay sweating and shivering till day came at last, and I wanted no breakfast. Blood rot had hit me. Chapter 31. I tottered down to breakfast. The cook was serving ripe mangoes, boiled eggs, and fried slices of something like plantains. They looked good enough, but one taste of the egg wrenched me with nausea. I staggered when I tried to stand, and Ram helped me back up the stair. I thought I was dying. "Not quite yet," he grinned at me bleakly. "You're white enough, but Earth has its own evolutionary tree. You could still draw an ace." I don't know how long I was sick. My watch still ran, but the days of Earth meant nothing here. Sometimes I was conscious. I remember Kenleth holding my hand, his warm touch a lifeline out of the darkness. I remember Ram lifting my head to give me water I couldn't swallow. Sometimes I was back on Earth. Once we were flying into Lubbock and they wouldn't let us land because I had blood fever. We flew on into a thunderstorm with no destination. Once we were back at home, Lupe had called the media to a press conference to announce our return. Derek tried to give a slideshow with shots of the Sahara Gate and all the strange worlds we had seen. The reporters laughed, and they walked out, and the campus cops were called to arrest me for bringing the fever home to Portales. Sometimes I was lying in the bottom of the launch, listening to the steady puff of the little engine, staring up at the awning. It was woven of coarse strips of some straw-colored reedy stuff with herringbone stripes of orange and rust. Sometimes they made patterns like the glyphs in the e-book, but never anything sane. But at last, a morning dawned when a breath of wind felt gratefully cool, and I heard birds singing somewhere. A bright sun rose in the blue sky above the awning. Kenlith was at the wheel, Whitewater warning him to steer clear of a snag. My head was clear again. I could breathe without coughing. I knew where I was, and I wanted to live. Before noon, I could sit up and look around us at the wide brown river and the green forest walls. Paraclaw was already far behind. Whitewater was taking us up the Blood River.
"To look for that Trilithon, if you remember," Ram said, "if it's anywhere near where that old map shows it."
I grew stronger. I was able to swallow a few sips of the hot black Korath tea when Kenlith offered it, and finally felt eager for another full mug. Kenlith fished from the boat, and Ram broiled his catch on the boiler door. They discovered ripe papayas in the abandoned fields, and yams Ram could bake. Once Kenlith found bees in a hollow tree. Ram built a fire to stun them with smoke and brought back a basket filled with delicious honeycombs. I grew ravenous for any food they offered. I was able to stand, able to climb out of the boat and walk on the sandbars when we stopped to gather driftwood for the boiler. My recollections of sweat and pain and dread began to fade away. I felt alive once more, alert to things around me. The river was lower now as the monsoon wind had changed. It was empty of traffic. The banks looked empty of people.
"Sheko breathed death on the river," Ram said. "They've gone back to the jungle."
Thoughts of his parents filled Kenlith's eyes with tears, and he showed me a ring his mother gave him the last time he saw her, after they had followed Toron into the jungle. Her last relic of his father, he thought it had come from some jungle tomb. A wide gold band, it was set with three polished black stones to make a tiny trilithon. It was too large for Kenlith's finger, and he wore it on a cord around his neck. The old brick fort was abandoned, but he wanted to see his old home. We tied up at the empty dock. I was able to limp ashore with him. Kenlith ran ahead of me to the scraps of the stake palisade that still stood where the compound had burned, and found only a new jungle of ferns and vines inside. Nothing was left that he remembered. He came back clutching the ring in his fingers. Pushing on upriver, we passed tributaries, one so wide that Whitewater seemed uncertain which branch to follow. Ram frowned over the maps in his e-book and found no useful clues.
"We'll trust our luck," he said, "or Whitewater's hunch. We stopped when we had to, for driftwood or fallen logs we could cut, and steamed on when we had steam. The channel narrowed, cut through rocky hills, the vegetation changed, rainforest replaced with evergreens. We found mountains ahead, blue in the distance.
Day by day they rose higher. We came out of barren hills into a high-walled canyon cut through black granite. It narrowed till the sky was a thin, bright strip we had to crane to see. The current grew too fast for the toiling engine. Thunder boomed against the cliffs. We came around a turn and found a waterfall ahead. I'd seen Niagara. This was wider, higher, the thunder louder. Kenlith stood up in the boat, gaping at the crashing water and the canyon walls that boxed us in.
"Is this the end?"
I thought it was. I still felt weak. I saw no way out. The water fell over an enormous dam, roaring down into a cloud of white spray lit with a rainbow arc where a shaft of sunlight struck it. Whitewater steered the launch to a tiny strip of gravel beach and eased us to it. He and Ram jumped out and pulled the launch half out of the water. We stood there on the beach, craning up at the dam. Built of something smooth and black, it curved from wall to canyon wall. I felt shut in, caught in the closing granite jaws.
"They were giants," Whitewater shook his head at it. "The magicians of the Grand Dominion."
Ram was scanning the dam's long curve.
"The map shows it," he said. "There's a long lake above it. It must have been built for power. There should have been tunnels to carry water to turbines and generators somewhere. Or maybe not. He shrugged and turned to scan the walls around us. So much has been forgotten.
Far enough? Whitewater gave him an inquiring frown. Is it back to Paraclaw?
We can't stop here. Not with the Trilithon just beyond the lake.
I can't leave the boat, Whitewater said. It's all I have.
Ram stood a moment frowning at me. Kenlith shrank against me, groping for my hand. Feeling helpless, I could only shrug.
We've nothing here. Ram winced as if from a stab of pain. We got to go on.
I don't see how.
Whitewater gestured at the black cliffs and the narrow, far scrap of sky.
You got a rough country ahead. We've been living on the land, but we've left the easy pickings behind us.
Will, Ram turned to me, are you fit to climb?
I'm stronger, I told him. I'll do my best. If you're that crazy, Whitewater said, I'll wait for you here.
Thanks, my friend. Ram gripped his hand. But don't wait too long. If we find a gate, if it lets us through, we'll never be back.
You will be, Whitewater frowned at Ram's face and the golden birthmark. Your destiny is here.
I've had my destiny. Ram flinched as if from an actual stab. It's over.
We shook Whitewater's hand and left him with the launch. Ram loaded himself with fruit we had dried, fish we had smoked, yam-like roots we could bake. Kenlith carried blankets. I had a water jug and a strip of the awning with ropes to stretch it like a tent. The dam builders had left us a way around the fall, a sloping ramp that led us behind that roaring water to a narrow crevice in the canyon wall. In single file we followed it for hours, uphill and down, until at last we came out into twilight on a windy ledge, the lake 1,000 feet below us, so vast that most of it was lost in the dusk. The wind had an icy bite. We retreated into the crevice and spread the blankets. I slept and dreamed that Ram had left us there alone. He had gone back with Whitewater to rule a new grand dominion. I felt relieved to find him still with us, kindling a tiny fire to make hot tea. By daylight we saw a range of snow-clad peaks beyond the lake, blue with distance. We were already high above timberline. I wondered if the Trilithon might be beyond our reach. But we made a frugal breakfast and took the trail again, over barren ridges and through rocky gorges. By noon we were down to the lake shore, the water so crystal clear that Kenlith wanted to swim till he dipped a foot and felt how cold it was. The trail went on, cut into the cliffs just a few yards above the water level. We followed it all day, to a narrow in the lake and a bridge across it, 5 long arches of some dark stone, hardly scarred by time. We camped in a shallow cave, where an overhang jutted above the path, and crossed the bridge next morning. The lake widened again beyond it, reaching far toward those snow-topped peaks. We left it there, climbing the path to a stony, treeless tableland. Next day, we saw the Trilithon. Toy small in the distance, so far that another noon had come before we reached it. It stood alone, the only feature on a scrap of barren plain. It had grown enormous as we finally neared it, the twin black pillars towering out of a broad black pavement. Ram opened his e-book and craned to study the symbols cut deep into the huge crossbar 100 feet above us. He sighed at last and snapped the book shut. Kenlith stood gaping at the pillars and the bleak landscape beyond them. The path had ended, and it looked like the road to nowhere. In a mix of awe and disbelief, he turned to Ram.
It's a door? Where does it go?
Quien sabe? He shrugged. That's what a friend of ours would say. With luck enough, we can hope to find her somewhere on the other side. We got no way to know except to try it.
He turned to Kenlith. Are you ready? Eyes shining, Kenlith caught my hand.
One more shuffle, one more deal.
Ram shrugged and grinned at me.
If you have the magic key.
I had worn the emerald pendant since the night he gave it to me. I slipped the silver chain over my head and gave it back. He held it in his right hand and caught mine with his left. I got my balance and held my breath. Grinning at Kenlith, he chanted his Swahili numbers. His hand gripped harder. We stepped through together. Chapter 32. The sunlight dimmed and reddened. My ears clicked to the air pressure change. The ground jolted as a different gravity caught me. My right ankle failed. I staggered and went down, my breath knocked out. I lay gasping for air that was suddenly oven-hot and bitter with dust.
Will!
Ram and Kenlith had my arms trying to help me up. Are you hurt?
I tried to say I was okay and found no voice. I tried to stand and fell back against the blackstone column. Sitting propped against the column, I gasped for breath and gripped the ankle to ease the pain.
Where? Kenlith sneezed and coughed from the dust. Where are we?
My little mama always said she'd run away from hell.
Ram stood gazing around us.
I think we're there.
The trilithon stood on a flat stone bench. The land around it was pocked with craters, but almost level to far, dark mountains. Wind-blown dust lay piled around scattered boulders of rust-red stone. The sun was huge and high, the color of red-hot iron, so dim that it didn't hurt my eyes.
Mars? Ram shook his head. We couldn't breathe on Mars.
What's that?
Kenlith was pointing back through the trilithon. The paved trail we had followed was gone. All around us, that lifeless waste of rocks and dust and crater pits reached away to dark and distant mountain peaks bare of snow. A gust of the burning wind stung my eyes with dust.
That thing, Ram turned to me, what could it be?
I blinked and rubbed my eyes and found the object. Far away among the craters, it was a great thick octagon of some dark stuff, something no natural force could have shaped.
A building?
Odd if it is, Ram shook his head. No doors or windows I can see.
He shaded his eyes to study it again.
Something the Trilithon builders left. Maybe the ship that brought them?
He sat down in the shadow of the high lintel stone and opened his pack to find his e-book. The script pages flickered across the screen. He stopped on the image of a planet that might have been a second Mars, waterless, cratered, the color of dust.
I wish we had Derek here.
He frowned a long time at the image and finally looked back at me.
But I think the book's a history of the Grand Dominion and its founders. I can't read the text, but the planets we've seen are all there. Even the twin system. I think they had to reach the planets with rocket craft before they built the trilithons. This planet is the first one in the book. Could be it's the first one they reached. Not fit for life.
He scowled at the red desolation around us.
They would have gone on from here. Found better worlds, but barren of life. Finally, Earth and life they could transplant from there.
He touched a key. Lines of golden hieroglyphs flashed across the image. He pointed at a tiny black trilithon symbol in a wide crater at the center of it.
That could be where we are.
He shook his head.
Or I could be wrong. No way to know.
An ugly place.
Kenneth shivered in spite of the heat and shaded his eyes to stare back through the trilithon at the dead waste beyond it. He turned anxiously to Ram.
Can we go back?
I wish we could.
Ram touched the pendant. We've tried. The key never lets us.
So what can we do?
Not much. He shook his head with a wry glance at me. Not till Will can walk.
He touched a button to close the book. It stayed open. A bell tone pealed. The dead screen flashed red and green again. It froze. Amber-hued. English letters scrawled themselves across it unsteadily, as if written in haste. Ram and Will, if you ever read this, you have reached Beta Central Trilithon. We are going on to Planet Alpha. We need you with us. If you can follow, take the southwest route to the Mountain Gate. Lupe and Derek. I read it to Kenlith.
Can we follow?
If we could,
Ram made an ironic grimace. If we had a taxi and knew where to go. Kenlith blinked forlornly at the red desert around us.
Is there any southwest here?
Derek explained directions, Ram told him. When you face a rising sun, you're looking east. The North Pole is on your left, south on your right. But I don't see any road or any signs to get us to the southwest route.
Ram shut the e-book and turned to frown again at that great black octagon.
I could walk out for a closer look. I don't know what we'll find. Likely nothing, but I wonder if it could be the workshop used and left here by the Trilithon builders. Interesting, maybe, if we could get inside. He shrugged. I see nothing else for us to do. I tried again to stand. Again a stab of pain brought me down. My ankle was swelling, turning purple, painful when I touched it. I looked around for anything that might make a cane or crutch, but all I saw was useless stone and dust. The effort to move left me breathing hard.
Oxygen, Ram grimaced.
It's short here. No green life to set it free. He gave me a wry grin. Just wait right here.
Can I go with you?
Kenlith turned to me.
Or do you need me here with you?
Go, I told him. Ram could need you more than I do.
Kenlith put his arms around me. Ram grinned and told me to call an ambulance if I needed help. I tried to laugh and felt tears on my cheeks. Helpless to do anything else, I sat back against the pillar, sweating in the heat and coughing from the acrid dust.
Back by sundown, Ram called, or light a lamp if we are late.
I watched them walk away, picking a careful path through the rocks and crater pits, raising puffs of orange dust the wind whipped around their feet. They went slowly. Once Kenlith tripped and fell. Ram picked him up and gestured as if trying to send him back, but they went on together. The black octagon was larger and farther than it looked. They were a long time on the way. The huge pale sun crept across the dusty sky. The shadow of the lintel shifted. I crawled on hands and knees to move our gear back into the moving shade. They diminished in the distance. Gusts of yellow dust hid them and hid them again. They became tiny insect figures dancing in the shimmer of heat on the horizon between dark red desert and red-lit sky. I lost them altogether. The great dull sun sank into what I thought should be the west. My ankle throbbed. The dust turned bitter in my throat, and I took a careful sip of water. I dozed, and the sun was suddenly lower. I thought they had gone too far to be back before it set. I was wondering dismally if they would ever be back at all, when I saw a bright flash above the octagon, and then a tiny black grasshopper soaring in silhouette against the sun's great face. The hopper spread and beat its stubby wings, climbing higher, gliding down across that vast red disk. Small and far as the creature was, I knew the shape, the long, narrow body and blunt silver head, the short wings, the black lever legs. It was another like the one that snatched Loopy out of the Trilithon circle on that first planet, like the one that seized Derek on the planet of the robots. I watched till it rose back across the sun's dull face and glided down toward me. I counted 5 flights before it dived at the point where I had last seen Kenlith and Ram. It soon soared again, away from me now, soared and soared again, till I lost it in the sky above that strange black structure. I waited, but saw nothing else before the sun went down. Purple dusk faded into moonless, starless darkness. I lay there on the hard stone floor, my ankle throbbing. The hot night wind took my breath and stung my throat with dust. I longed for Kenlith's bright laugh, for Ram's calm courage, for Loopy and Derek, for any spark of hope. Yet, somehow, I slept. I dreamed that I'd somehow got back home to the university and called a press conference at the campus union. Reporters jeered at me. NASA scientists called my story a hoax. Our instant skipping from planet to planet was forbidden by Einstein's laws of space and time. A chartered radar plane had flown over the Sahara and found no trace of any Trilithon buried under the sand. Skeptics demanded evidence, but I had no written records, no photos of the Skywire or the robots or the hoppers, no artifacts from the fallen Grand Dominion. The university president wanted to know what had become of his missing faculty members. Refusing to believe anything I said, he called the campus cops and then the state police. I was arrested and tried in district court. The judge was a tall, black-robed man who had Crail's sick and angry face. In a funereal voice, he stated the case against me.
William Martin Stone, you are charged by the state of New Mexico with the murders of Dr. Derek Ironcraft, Dr. Lupe Vargas, and Dr. Ram Chenji. You are charged with destruction of evidence, obstruction of justice, and perjury in the fourth degree. What is your plea?
My attorney rose to plead not guilty by reason of insanity. My only witness was Kenlith, still in the muddy rags he had worn when we picked him up out of the jungle. The prosecuting attorney ridiculed him. What court would accept the lies of a scrawny little black kid, a minor, and an alien from nowhere? His testimony was stricken from the record. The prosecuting attorney called a clever dark officer from Interpol, who clinched the case against me. Ram had been the kingpin of a plot to overthrow the government of his native Kenya. Derek and Lupe were his allies. They had infiltrated a terrorist group to obtain high explosives, and they were flying to Nairobi to assassinate the president. Kenyan intelligence officials had bribed me to nip the plot. I planted a stolen bomb in Ram's briefcase. Their plane crashed in the dunes of the Grand Erg Oriental, where searchers could never reach it. All three were certainly dead. The prosecutor called me a criminal idiot if I expected a fairy tale of magic trilithons to shield me from the justice I deserved. My attorney rested his case. The jury glided in, six glittering snakes shaped of glittering diamonds. Climbing into the jury box, they flashed their scarlet eyes at the lawyers and took half-human forms. The foreman's head became Whitewater's, and he read the decision from Ram's e-book. Death by lethal injection. I woke, drenched with sweat and parched with thirst. The giant sun was rising, veiled in wind-whipped dust that dimmed into a great copper plate and burned my eyes. The courtroom and the cellular robots were gone, but that sentence of death was still with me. It would execute itself when my food and water were gone.
Chapter 33. I was there an endless week as my watch measured Earth time. 15 of the planet's days. It spun fast. Its day hardly a dozen hours. But each of those dragged on forever. I watched the path Ram and Kenlith had followed and searched the dull red sky in the direction the hopper had flown. I ate when hunger drove me. I hoarded water till the last drop was gone. I slept when I could and endured evil dreams.
"Ty Will,"
I heard Kenlith's anxious voice and felt his finger on my arm.
"Are you okay?"
For a moment I thought he was another dream, but I opened my sticky eyes and found him leaning over me, clad in new white garments. Ram stood beside him, garbed in the same tight jacket and ballooning pants. Behind them I saw the machine that had brought them. The size of a van, it had no wheels, resting instead on a thick mattress of something that shaped itself like a black rubber balloon to fit the ground. It was topped with a dark oval shell that gleamed like glass. A door in the end had swung down to make a ramp.
"Will!" Ram helped me up. My ankle felt stiff, but I could stand. "How are you?"
My dry throat made a hoarse rasp when I tried to answer. I swayed on my feet and the trilithon spun around me. I tried to swallow and Kenlith held a cup of cold water to my lips, coughed and strangled on it, finally washed my mouth, took an uneasy sip, then reckless gulps.
"Better," I managed to whisper, "since you got here."
"We tried to come sooner,"
Kenlith said.
"The hoppers kept us in the octagon."
Ram helped me into a small space at the end of the machine. The ramp lifted to seal the door behind. Air hissed, suddenly, dust-free and cool. A second door opened into a larger space that had seats rather like those in a small RV.
An airlock, Ram said, and our own ventilation system.
I sank into a seat. Kenlith folded a little table down before me, brought a basin of water and a sponge to let me wash the dust out of my eyes, the sweat cake grime off my hands and face. He brought a cup of hot soup and a tray of crisp little biscuits. It was the banquet I'd longed for. I breathed the good air, sipped and nibbled, collapsed suddenly into a fit of sobbing.
"What's wrong, Tywill?"
Kenlith hovered over me, but I could only lie back in the seat, shaking, struck with a wave of terror that this was only one more dream, that I would wake still alone. He brought the sponge to let me wipe my eyes again. I'd nerved myself to die, and relief had overwhelmed me. I sat up at last, caught my breath, and found life enough to ask questions. Had they found humans?
Not yet, Ram frowned. This machine seems designed to fit the human form, and we've found traces
of Derek and Loopy. He nodded with a wry little shrug.
We found their backpacks in a sort of museum, hung up for display along with their clothing and possessions, marked with labels we couldn't read. Nothing else.
You saw a hopper?
A monster! Kenlith went shrill. As big as a ship. It came down at us out of the sky. I was terribly afraid, but that was exciting. It had arms like slick snakes and hands with a dozen fingers. It grabbed us up and carried us back to the hive.
He looked at Ram.
If that's what you'd call it.
No, the place does seem to be a sort of hive.
Ram nodded, frowning.
Or maybe a factory. We saw what I think is a baby hopper, a big, pale, gray slug floating in a tank of liquid. Part of it was wrinkled like a brain. Something was pulsing like a heart. It had no eyes, no limbs. Next to it was a big workshop where a gang of those multicellular robots were turning out parts for it, making them out of metal and some sort of plastic. The hard body shell, those long legs, the wings, the silver-colored skull. I think the hoppers are half machine, half alive.
Are they intelligent?
Their creators certainly were.
Eyes narrowed, he sat staring out across the craters toward the far black bulk of what he called the octagon. A gust of wind lifted a veil of yellow dust that hid it. Those creators haunted me. Their vast age, their works, their absence. I shivered to a chill of dread.
Engineers, he muttered. Master engineers. They must have designed the hoppers and the robots to explore the galaxy, to build and operate the Trilithon system, maybe to bring life from Earth and populate the planets where we've been. But then they went away, as if they were never here.
His shoulders hunched as if he shared my dread.
I don't know. I tried to talk to the hopper. The best response I ever got was a bellow that made me shake. The robots might be better if we knew the language.
What about us? Why did they pick you up?
They wanted to study us, Kenlith said. Like bugs under a lens.
They examined us, Ram nodded. Stripped us, weighed and measured us. Tested our vision and our hearing. Ran us through a sort of maze, I guess, to test our own intelligence.
That's how they found my ring.
Kenlith showed it to us, still hung on the cord around his neck, the gold band set with the tiny black trilithon.
The one his mother gave him, Ram said. I don't know where she got it, but it must be a relic of the Grand Dominion. The robots found it and took it to the hopper. It examined it under those big eyes that shine like searchlights, and let the robots give it back to Kenlith.
And they worshipped me, his eyes had lit, bowed to me and gave me a gift, a wonderful toy.
He showed it to me, a crystal tetrahedron, clear as glass, 2 or 3 inches on a side.
A lucky break, Ram shrugged with a puzzled frown. I don't understand the toy, if it is a toy, but the ring's magic. It must come down from the time of the Grand Dominion. It carries authority. They gave us the machine and let us go.
Derek and Lupe? I asked.
You say you saw their packs?
They must have been here. They had no magic ring, but they should have scored well on the IQ tests. I'd like to think the Hoppers came to respect them, fitted them out, and let them go on.
Where could they go?
Not back to Earth. Not if I know them. I think they'd want to go on to look for the creators.
That shook me.
Where? I whispered. Where could they be?
Not here, for sure. This planet never cradled the evolution of anything. A riddle Derek and Lupe would love if they got a chance to tackle it. A chance for us if we can follow them.
He stopped to frown at me. If you're game for it, Will.
I caught my breath and asked what he meant.
The Hoppers run the Trilithon system. They take orders from Kenlith since they saw the ring. I think we could get them to take you back to Earth. Kenlith, too, if he wants to go with you.
That hit me like an unexpected fist. Emotion choked me. I broke into another fit of sobbing.
Don't you want me with you, Ty, Will?
Kenlith put his arms around me.
You don't have to take me.
He brought me a cup of water. I took a gulp and found my voice. I want you with me when we go, I told him and turned to Ram. I wish we were home, but I won't. I can't run out on you.
Soberly, Ram shook his head. Better take time to think about it, Will. If there's a chance to find Derek and Lupe, I have to go on. But it won't be a picnic. The message said they needed us, but we might never find them.
He studied me again. You've been through rough times. I don't think you're really over the fever. Frankly, you don't look fit to go.
We're the Four Horsemen, remember? I tried to grin. I can't go home alone.
We stayed in that odd vehicle, there in the shadow of the Trilithon, through two more of the planet's windy days. Ram spent most of them at the controls, in the nose, and at a navigation screen, with what he thought was an operator's handbook. It seemed to show routes across the area and views of destinations.
Imagine a chimp in a car with no instructor and a book he can't read,
he mocked himself. The robots don't give driving lessons.
Kenlith spent hours absorbed in his new toy, the crystal tetrahedron. I began to see what made it wonderful. Changing colors flashed through it when he pressed the points. I glimpsed fleeting images of human-seeming faces, strange creatures, symbols from that script we had never been able to read, all gone before I could really see them.
It's a game, he said. I have to learn the rules.
I asked how the vehicle moved with no wheels.
It crawls.
Ram shook his head. Don't ask me how. Never very fast, but it's fit for rough country. No tires to puncture. You couldn't make it collide with anything or turn it over. I think it's also our boat, if we had water to float it. There's a sort of autopilot, and something that looks like our satellite navigation systems back at home. I can't read the legends, but the screen shows a map of the crater, with a red dot for the big disk and a Trilithon sign for the point where we are. Routes across the area are marked in yellow. One runs southwest to the mountains, maybe a couple hundred miles. He stopped to frown at me. Southwest. That could be the route Derek and Lupe took. One more gamble, if you really get fit for it.
I ate, drank, dozed, ventured outside for short walks in the dusty heat, and finally convinced Ram that I was fit for travel. He drove us by the Octagon. It was even more enormous than I'd thought. Maybe a mile across, the long black wall towering several hundred feet above us. As we came near, a tiny seeming door opened down on the ground level. A robot marched out, an orange-colored light flashing on the crown of its plastic head. Ram answered with a light on the nose of the machine. It made an about-face and flashed a green signal. Its plastic arm pointed and froze. Ram drove us on.
"Slow," he said, "but it sure beats walking."
There was a sort of joystick, but he let the machine steer itself. Turning away from the Octagon, it found a path that ran the way the robot had pointed.
Wind drifted dust covered any pavement it might have ever had, but it was level and smooth enough, curbed here and there with ragged rows of boulders that had been moved to level it. It led straight across the red-lit desert as far as I could see.
"Where are we going?"
Kenlith was flushed with excitement.
"Where do you think?"
Ram was tapping the keys of his e-book, squinting at the flicker of script and image.
"We'll see," he frowned at the long road ahead. "The book's still Greek to me, but the pictures begin to make a sort of sense. I think we're in a vast depression, left early in the planet's history by the impact of something big. It's deep, maybe a couple hundred miles across. We're on a route toward the mountains around it." He and Kenlith took turns in the driver's seat, but the machine left nothing for them to do. I sat watching the rocks and craters slide past. The machine moved without jolts or vibration, but it had a gentle sway that finally lulled me to sleep. It had stopped when Kenlith woke me. We had reached a towering precipice. The road came to a dead end against a tall trilithon carved into the cliff and solid rock ahead. Crater pits had been smoothed to level a space below it. I saw no other path leading away.
"We're here," he was shouting. "Breakfast, and then we're going into the mountain."
He and Ram were busy with a little device that dispensed hot tea and crisp little cakes. We ate. Ram studied his e-book and sat again at the controls, his birthmark glowing. He fumbled under his white jacket for the emerald pendant and raised it.
"Ready?"
He looked around at Kenlith and me.
"Ready!" Kenlith shouted. "Go!"
He touched something. The machine lurched ahead.
Chapter 34 Black midnight fell. The rock-carved trilithon was gone. The dull red sun, the lurid sky, the wall ahead. Ram stopped the machine. The pale green glow of the instrument light went out. The crown of worlds shone golden on his forehead, but I saw nothing else. We sat, lost in suffocating darkness.
"What happened?"
Kenlith whispered.
"Are we dead?"
"Not yet," Ram said. We sat there while our eyes adjusted to the dark. Stars came out one by one as we sat there waiting, wondering. Kenlith sat close beside me, silent. A faint blue spark burned low in the east, a white spark to its right, a dim red point below it. More and more came behind them as we sat there, rising so slowly I thought they were never really moving, all low in the east, none overhead or north or south or west.
"Strange,"
Ram shook his head.
"We've seen half a dozen skies from planets light-years apart, but all somewhere in the galaxy. They all had our own Milky Way, but none like this."
Hours passed. My legs cramped from sitting too long. Ram turned on the inside lights. Kenlith worked the dispenser to bring us cups of a tart amber drink and a tray of crisp almond-flavored biscuits. With lights out and our eyes adjusted again, we found a star cloud in the east. Thousands of stars, bright and faint, a luminous haze behind them.
"Look!"
Kenlith caught Ram's arm.
"Your birthmark!"
I saw an odd constellation. A compact cluster made a level bar. Brighter stars made an arc above it. They formed the crown of worlds. I turned to stare at the glowing pattern on his forehead.
"The same."
I couldn't stop myself. "What does it mean?"
"Nothing," Ram shrugged. "Nothing I like. Derek said it."